One constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. It reminds us of all that once was good.
The only church that truly feeds the soul day in, day out is the Church of Baseball.
White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. The latest news and views from players, coaches, and direct from the front office. White Sox Weekly, on the proud new home for Chicago White Sox baseball. WLS EM 890.
Welcome in to White Sox Weekly. We are officially in the spring training season. I'm technically in the spring training season, but the heck with it. We'll take it. I'm Connor McKnight. I got you for the next hour or so. Welcome in to White Sox Weekly. We got a great show for you this afternoon. We always do. Tim Anderson, White Sox shortstop prospect and one of the guys ranked in the top 100 by just about every scouting service you ask, is going to join us just a little bit after the 12:30 news. We'll also be joined by Comcast Sportsnet's Dan Hayes, who is out in Arizona. He's got a little bit of time in between workouts and, well, not his workouts, but the White Sox workouts. I mean, I'm sure Dan gets it in when he's out there, but that between their workouts and sitting down with a couple of players, we'll have a chance to talk with Dan and see how he eyes this season and this spring training coming up. The conversation with Tim Anderson is going to be a good one. I'm looking forward to it. He did something fairly cool and something that more and more players are getting into. They're kind of giving you an insight into them instead of us, you know, like the media being able to, you know, bring interviews to you and give you a window into a guy's, you know, heart and soul and what it took for him to make it into the prospect rankings as he is now and having a shot at being called up when the team deems him ready to come up this season. Guys are writing for themselves. We'll get into that a little bit too. Derek Jeter has done this with his website, the Players Tribune. And there's another outlet, FutureSox.com, that let Tim Anderson do it. So we'll talk to him about that a little bit as well. Obviously, you know, the story coming in, and we want your feedback on it. We want your involvement with the show. The story coming in is Rick Hahn and Chris Sale and everybody else reporting in at pitchers and catchers yesterday and making a little bit of noise and setting down some expectations for this 2016 White Sox season and taking a look at what they hope to accomplish coming into this year. We'll play some of the sound from Rick Hahn down there in Arizona. I thought some of the things he said were fairly interesting. Some are, you know, sitting and waiting and seeing what the next couple of weeks bring this team and what the offseason continues to be like, because, you know, we are still in a weird way. I think the offseason stretches longer and longer these years, you know, as the seasons have gone on. You've got teams like players like Dexter Fowler and Giovanni Gallardo and Austin Jackson and Ian Desmond. I mean, decent players, guys who would be, you know, if not starters, then definite role players on a lot of different clubs throughout the big leagues, still waiting around and looking for jobs. So, you know, more and more as the qualifying offer, and we've talked about this a lot here on the show on White Sox Weekly, as the qualifying offer exists and is attached to good players, we wait, because teams that, you know, would like to sign these guys, whether they're the White Sox or not, you know, whether this team, whether your White Sox team is involved in or really interested in a player that's got a qualifying offer attached, or other teams are, you know, we kind of sit and wait, and when we're forced to do it because of some of the rules. It's been a sit and wait for a long time here in the offseason. I mean, I feel like we're all ready for baseball to start, regardless of, you know, what team you're pulling for, and yet, you know, we want news. I guess that's the outset of a 24-hour news cycle. We're just not satisfied by anything, and we want it now. We want it now, damn it. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on the show. You want to get involved that way? You absolutely can. You can also text us. You shoot your text to 68683, and do please include WLSAM in your message if you want to get a thought across on the White Sox, on spring training starting up. We are officially in that time of year, and couldn't be happier about it. You can also do the whole Twitter thing. You can find me on Twitter at C1, the number C1. McKnight, you want to get a question or a thought or a comment on the White Sox out there on Twitter, we will get it on the show. I promise you that. But want to start here with some of the conversation, and we'll talk to Dan Hayes just after a quick break here. He of Comcast Sportsnet, you follow him on Twitter too, at CSN Hayes. Rick Hahn has been pretty consistent in his message over the last handful of weeks, really since Sox Fest, since WLS, you know, we were able to grab onto the White Sox broadcasts here and White Sox Weekly and kind of take a look at what this offseason, how this offseason is going to be shaped for the Sox. Hahn maintains some, leaves it open rather, I guess, to the possibility that there could be more on the way for the Sox, and yet also reminds you, I think, over and over again, that there's optimism within this team, and not so much just with the additions of guys like Brett Laurie and Todd Frazier, but also from internal improvement. Guys like Melky Cabrera and Adam Eaton starting the season the way they finished the season last year. Tapping into the flashes of potential that you've seen from Avisail Garcia, you know, as a 24-year-old outfielder now. I mean, that's a big part of this offense. That's a contingent piece of this White Sox team scoring the runs they didn't score last season and helping bolster a pitching staff that, you know, could boast to be one of the top in the American League when it's all said and done after the 2016 season. We'll talk to Dan Hayes on the other side of a quick commercial break here and get his take on how the White Sox have reported to spring training, some of the fun stories. I don't like this at all, but I love that every year, no matter what team you follow, you get a "this guy's in the best shape of his life" story. I think it's fantastic. We'll find out which White Sox player is in the best shape of his life, and we'll find out, you know, exactly who that's going to be and whether it matters or not. I love the story. It's every spring, and we'll just keep doing it. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. Quick break, and we get to Dan Hayes at Comcast Sportsnet right here on WLS AM 890.
White Sox baseball. Experience it here. WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. This is the first show, the very first show of 2016, where players are in uniform in Arizona working out and doing things of consequence and meeting and ground balls and PFPs and all that other good stuff. Dan Hayes at Comcast Sportsnet is out in Arizona and covering all of the routine practices and ground balls and bunting practices that are out there. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Connor, let's not play this. You know, it's really about getting a tan. That's it. That's why we're here.
That's it. You're right. And getting a little golf in. A little golf here and there between workouts, and then you work on the tan. Really, that's all it is.
Exactly. You know, I mean, there's some work involved, but it's all the other stuff, and then do the work on the side. So
what White Sox player, when you walked into the locker room in the clubhouse yesterday, which player still had his golf clubs right next to the locker and hadn't cleared those out before you guys had gone in to ask some questions?
Surprisingly, there was nobody.
You're kidding me.
It's been a lot of guys are already here. You know, there's I think four position players on the major league roster that haven't arrived yet. So Avi Garcia is one of those guys right now. I heard he's been working out in Florida, but you know, he's got the boxes in front of his locker. That's the closest two that I've seen so far. Everybody else is here. They've been ready to go, and you know, it's very businesslike early on here.
That's funny, because even and regardless of, you know, the person's or the player's mindset, there's almost always, when you walk into the clubhouse that first day, there's always somebody who's got, like, you know, a bag of golf clubs or a huge suitcase that they just haven't put anywhere yet, or that, you know, White Sox staff just hasn't quite moved yet, and you're looking around going, oh, play a little nine this morning? Is that what happened before you got in?
Exactly. I almost expected that. If I had shown up on Thursday, I may have gotten a little bit more of that.
Sure.
It's been a quick start here. You know, most teams do their report date first and then their workout the next day. The White Sox kind of combine the two. So that first day, you know, they're usually in before because they know they're getting to work the day that they have to pass their drug test and all that stuff. So that probably is part of it. It's been a quick start here.
Talking with Dan Hayes at Comcast Sportsnet. You could follow him on Twitter at CSN Hayes. It's Hayes. Want to ask you this, and after listening to some of what Chris Sale had to say with you guys yesterday, we talk a lot about, you know, in this town, we're pretty familiar with the Blackhawks winning a title and then having some sort of, you know, because they play so much darn hockey when you win a Stanley Cup, there's a hangover effect that we've talked about a lot, whether that's getting a roster back together or coming back and, like, wanting to just play hockey again. I think in some cases, regardless of whether you win a title or not, you can have some kind of hangover from last season. And I wonder, and I'm not saying that the hangover is intrinsically bad, but I think, you know, given what Chris Sale was talking about, there is some leftover feelings, or there are some leftover feelings about last season. And I almost get the sense that Chris Sale would like to, you know, exorcise them like demons. I kind of get that feeling.
Absolutely. I mean, we talked about just winning with him. And, you know, I mean, the guy's been in the league. This is his seventh year. And he's come close a couple times, you know, 2010. I think they were in second place. But he's never had a chance to win. You know, they had that three-game lead in 2012, and that disappeared in the last 15 days of the season. But you can tell that there's some disappointment, some lingering disappointment. I think everybody had a lot of high expectations last year. And really, I mean, across the board, there weren't many guys that you couldn't find something that their season went wrong at some point. You know, Chris Sale had a great season himself, 274 strikeouts, set the franchise record. But down the stretch, he wasn't very good. You know, he knew it. But at that point, the season was sort of over, you know, kind of ended there in mid-August. It was clear it was kind of what direction it was going. But you can definitely sense it. I think that's probably a good thing in his case, because there's a lot of motivation. I mean, Chris Sale is usually a pretty highly motivated guy, but I think really he's getting tired of losing, wants to win, and you can sense that when he talks about it.
I asked him about, you know, at Sox Fest, about becoming – he's not the old man on the staff, but he's definitely got – like you said, he's got 7 years in the bigs. He is an elite, maybe the best left-handed arm in baseball. He's certainly in that conversation if you want to start having it. Do you get the sense that he has changed some?
Well, for sure. I mean, just in the maturity level, I mean, he talked about yesterday, he said he was surprised to find out he's the second most tenured White Sox player. It's him and John Danks now. And you know, he talked about seeing guys that were a little bit further down the road than him and keeping an eye on them over the years and noticing how he's sort of become that guy. And I think that, you know, it's kind of clicked in his head that he's one of those guys that people look up to. And, you know, he's still going to always be that kid because, I mean, I've covered – this is my 10th season, and I will say that Chris Sale probably has more fun on a baseball field than 99% of the guys I've seen. He has that kid-like quality to him, but I think also he's starting to realize that people are going to watch him and keep a close eye as if they weren't already. But, I mean, obviously the talent has always been there, and he's been an elite pitcher, but now kind of watch him in the clubhouse, and I think he gets that, and probably that's a good thing just because, you know, the guy is already a leader, has always been, but now he can kind of show how he's gotten there, because I don't know that a lot of people would have thought when they drafted him that this guy would have lasted this long with that kind of frame, and it's all about his work ethic and sticking to the throwing program that Don Cooper and Herm Schneider and Alan Thomas have all kind of worked on over the years, and it's really been successful.
So, Dan, we had a little bit of fun in the mornings on the John Howell Show, just kind of talking about the USA Today projections that had the Sox winning 90 and taking the AL Central, the BP projections. I shouldn't say BP. I should say Pecota projections that had the White Sox winning 82. And I believe that had them in second in the AL Central. Correct me if I'm wrong there. But projections have, by and large, been good for this ball club. I wonder if guys are aware of that. I mean, baseball players are notorious for, you know, quote unquote, not reading their own press, but maybe sometimes reading their own press all the time. I wonder if that's palpable down there.
You know, I think that they're aware of it, but at the same time, I think guys try to downplay it. And the only reason that they downplay it is projections are great. And Zips had them at 84 wins.
That's right. That's right.
So they've been across the board really good, but, you know, last year they were pretty high too. And I think that, one, they're cognizant of the fact that they lost 86 games last year and they're supposed to win about 85 to 90. And so, but also the Kansas City Royals, Pecota has not been very kind to them over the years, and they've been in the World Series 2 years running. So I think, you know, of course they're aware that there's supposed to be some good things happening here, but I think that at the same time, they kind of have to downplay it just because of their own experience with it. I mean, it is a great thing to see that this team on paper can do good things. They know that, and was just talking to somebody about that. I mean, there's not a whole lot of difference between the top teams and the bottom teams in the American League. It's very level on the playing field. Obviously, Boston has a bunch of high-priced guys, and the Yankees do too. But you know, we saw it last year, how much a defense can sidetrack a team, how much just a routine error or a double play that's not turned or a cutoff man missed can really throw a wrench into your plans. And that White Sox defense, you know, early on, the team wasn't hitting, but really I think the defense deflated them so much. Just, you know, Jeff Samardzija, you could do a great case study alone on how different his season could have been if those first 6 weeks, if there'd been better defense played behind him. So, you know, I think they're kind of encouraged by that stuff, but they know that they have to execute it, and there's a lot to do to get there.
You mentioned defense, and the White Sox were far from the only team, even in the American League, that had defense rear up and bite them. I mean, you look at the Indians, they were miserable on defense. The Orioles weren't that great, and that pitching staff suffered for it, I think. By and large, that was a bugaboo for a number of teams that could have otherwise probably made, well, if not contended, definitely made, you know, the Royals and the Yankees kind of runs for their money, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Royals ran away with that division last year. There was like an 11-game lead.
Right.
It felt like on May 1st it was an 11-game lead. But you look at what the Indians, their pitching staff, I mean, that starting rotation should be competing for a playoff spot every year. The White Sox with their front three and potentially with Matt Latos, that's a great group. And last year they had Samardzija. Yeah, defense is critical. The little things are critical, and the base running is critical, especially when you're a team like the White Sox who were last in the American League and on base. You got to get on base and then take care of that. And everything that was kind of a minute detail like that got away from them. It was such a strange run. And you could see why they were excited going in and how quickly they got deflated by it, because when that stuff doesn't fix itself, it's troublesome. And, you know, they went in with Connor Gillespie at third base and they expected him to hit enough to make up for his average at best defense. And he just didn't hit. And then you had second base issues with Micah Johnson early on. Both those areas got shored up, but it was with less offensive production. You know, Gordon Beckham and Tyler Saldino locked down third base. I mean, that was gold glove level third base from about May 20th on through the rest of the season. But they also were terrible with the offense. And so I think that's a good reason why Todd Frazier, that acquisition is good, just because he should be able to provide a similar level of defense to what those guys did, but bring in 25 to 30 home run power along with it. And Brett Laurie, you know, I've heard actually really encouraging things about him at second base, and he also hit 16 home runs. Last year they were dead last in OPS at second base and third base, and this year they've added those two guys who combined to hit 30 more home runs than the players at those positions hit last year for the White Sox. So, you know, they've done a decent job of shoring up the infield defense and yet still adding some offense to it.
How was your conversation with Matt Latos yesterday, and how do you figure he factors into this rotation to start the year?
If he's healthy, I think he's already locked it up, you know, and he said that the knee, he worked on strengthening it all off season, did a good job with it.
And Dan, that's his landing knee, right?
Yeah, it is his landing knee. And so, I mean, obviously it's a critical part of the whole, his whole delivery. So, but you know, he said that he worked hard on that, feels good about it. I still think there's probably some work to be done because he probably spent so much time on that, he's got to catch up, basically. I mean, you're dealing with knee issues, and that's a critical part. It kind of hurts some of your other training, but he should. I mean, he's a veteran guy, and he should be able to catch up, especially with down here. But you could tell that he was probably a little ticked off. I mean, the most he would say was that the offseason was interesting. I mean, you're talking about a guy that for 4 years he won 51 games, and pitcher wins, you know, it's not a big deal. But when you still when you rack up 51 of them in four seasons with a 3.27 ERA, you've done a pretty good job. And for him to be a free agent for the first time and to be sitting out there on February 9th and to have to take a one-year, $3 million deal, I'm sure he had some expectations of a much better offseason. And I think he kind of knows that the knee and other aspects need to be cleaned up a little bit and that he can get a better deal next year. But I'd say there's some motivation there for sure.
Dan, ask you this one before we let you go here. We're up against news in a couple of minutes. Do the White Sox make a move in the month of March?
I still think that's a strong possibility. They've done it the last couple of years where sometimes it's a waiver claim. But they acquired Connor Gillespie, I think it was February 23rd a couple years ago. So they always have their eyes open. I know they were close to some stuff a couple of springs ago, maybe 2 years ago, when they had that glut of second basemen and almost had something worked out. So it wouldn't surprise me if they added an outfielder. There's still a few guys in free agency. I don't see Dexter Fowler as a possibility. But
is that because of the length attached to what Dexter seems to be looking for?
Yeah, you know, when you still see that he's asking for 4 years, and I saw that suggestion out there yesterday, that's a big deal to be asking for when you're looking for a home on February 20th or whatever the date is here, 19th. It's crazy that, but I you can understand it. This is his payday, and he's going to hang on as long as he can, and it's a good negotiation tactic. But, you know, teams, you look at a few outfields, and they're a little crowded, and you wonder if that's where the White Sox might go. I mean, trades potentially could happen. It's going to be interesting. I do think it wouldn't surprise me if they made a move in the month of March.
Dan, appreciate it as always. Good talking with you. We will see you out in Arizona in a little while.
All right. Thanks, Connor. Take it easy.
Absolutely. Dan Hayes of CSNChicago.com. You can read his stuff there. Follow him on Twitter at CSN Hayes. It's H-A-Y-E-S. Take a quick break. We got the news, and White Sox shortstop and top prospect Tim Anderson is going to join us just after the 12:30 news. Keep it here on White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
Big John Howe, Rush, and starting this spring, the Chicago White Sox. WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight, and we head out to Arizona right now. We're joined by White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson. Hey, Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Let me ask you this. I wanted to call, and I appreciate you hopping on with us. I read the column that you wrote for the guys over at FutureSox.com. It's about your break coming up, starting and playing basketball, getting started at East Central, all that kind of thing. What made you want to write this thing, or what appealed to you when the guys contacted you about writing this?
Well, it was just one of those things that, I mean, people asked me my story, and I just felt like that it was more for me to tell. I felt like that I kind of hit a lot and didn't really, you know, tell it the way I wanted to tell it. So I just sat back and wrote that and just get everything out.
Was it tough to write at times? I mean, because you know, you go through it, you're talking about the broken legs, the setbacks, how tough it was, rewarding, but tough it was at East Central. I mean, was it difficult to sit down and write?
Yeah, it was tough to actually write, but it was exciting. I mean, it was just great moments that I enjoy. Just sitting there with my fiance and my mother and my dad when I wrote it, and it was just like, I mean, it was amazing. It was like, it's a blessing. Just, you know, just some of the things I went through just to get to where I am today. You know what I mean? I enjoyed it. It was a great time. But then again, I had to overcome a lot. So.
Yeah, the two broken legs, I can't imagine. Do you want to talk about how that happened to you and what went through, you know, the process that you went through to get back from that?
It was just, you know, just in basketball practice. It happened back-to-back, so it was, man, you know, going up the wrong way in practice and just hearing it pop and just having a cast from my thigh down to my foot was just, you know, it was miserable. Some nights I used to just sit down on the couch and just, man, be in tears, and it was very emotional. Just talking to my parents and just, like, you know, being close to giving up, and, you know, but they had faith in me, and just they kept me going. So yeah, I was real close to just, you know, basically hanging everything up and, you know, just living normal life and no sports. So,
man, it's got to be a tough decision. We're talking to White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson. So, Tim, I broke an arm when I was a kid. I can't imagine that the leg's got to be worse. But for me, it was the itching. I mean, it was the itching inside the cast that drove me nuts. I got to imagine that drove you crazy.
Yeah, it was the itching and the cushion would get messed up by my knee, so the cast would rub my
that's
knee
awful.
And just. It'd be a terrible feeling.
Did you get the coat hanger out and try and go down the cast to itch the thing? Because I ended up doing that and just ripped the hell out of the cast.
Yeah, I did, and actually it messes up the cotton, so it hurts even worse when it lays on your knee. So
do you still get shots up? Do you get to play a little bit? Because I know, I mean, it comes across in the piece, and again, it's on FutureSox.com. Do you get? Do you have a chance to strap it up a little bit and play some?
No, I haven't played in It's been a while since I picked up a basketball. The only shooting I do is when I'm keeping the bucket, I'll shoot the baseballs into the bag. So that's just about it.
Could we, if we got a horse game going, and mind you, I was cut sophomore year from my basketball team in high school. I mean, you feel like you probably still take me down on a horse?
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah,
no doubt.
Okay, good. No, I'm glad to know that the skills haven't atrophied that badly. So, spring training, I mean, it's upon us. It's not official report yet, but what do you, in the mornings, before you start workouts, what's the routine for Tim Anderson? Are you grabbing a bunch of breakfast? Do you eat later? How have you gotten used to the Arizona schedule so far?
I'm just coming in and grabbing breakfast, just greeting guys and talking to guys and, just hanging out and just basically getting comfortable and just enjoying it and having a good time, so...
Do you plan on finding guys, veteran guys, and learning their routines? I mean, is it a point where you can, take a look at some of the better players, the veteran players on this team, and go, I got to learn how Adam does this in the morning?
Yeah, no doubt. As in Frazier, Todd Frazier.
Sure.
We have conversations every now and then, so I can see looking forward to kind of latching on to one a guy like that and just see his routine and basically hopefully he can take me on his wing and, show me the rope. So,
White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson hanging out with us for a couple of minutes here on White Sox Weekly. Is there, Tim, did you bring a checklist to spring training this year? I mean, are there things that you personally want to get done in the next, month, 6 weeks?
I do have a checklist. I'm walking on a checklist all the time. As an artist would say, I play with a chip on my shoulder. So I'm just here to impress and learn and just soak much information as I can and just however those chips lay and whatever happens. So I can't control. So I'm just here to impress and just enjoy and be comfortable and just have a good time.
Is one of the things on that checklist make Robin Ventura's decision tough when spring training ends?
Yes, for sure. It's show him everything I got, give him my all, and just see what happens at the end. So
you mentioned in the article, and you mentioned just a minute ago that you like to play with a chip on your shoulder. I'm reading through, and one of the paragraphs, I'm just gonna real quickly go through what you wrote here. Your first two games, sophomore year in college. You know where I'm going with this, too.
Yeah.
7 of 8 with 3 home runs, and you finished that sophomore year with a .495 batting average, which is good no matter where you do it, and 41 stolen bases.
Yeah.
You put that in the article for a reason, and you like to talk about the chip on your shoulder. I wonder if that's something that, did you get brought up with that? Did you get to a point where this helps you every day when you put the cleats on?
It does, actually. It just... And every time I strap the cleats on or step in between the lines, it's just time to go get it and earn it and just give it your all. So it actually helps me and just keep me going and don't take the small things for granted and take advantage of every opportunity that I have. So,
what defensively is left for you to learn at shortstop? Is there something that you, is it the turn, is it something that going to your left, deep in the hole, that kind of thing? Is there something that's kind of bugging you?
No, I feel comfortable. That's the main thing, is just getting comfortable and
yeah.
just really enjoying and having a good time, and that's something that I really really stressed on and worked on throughout the season last season, and that was just getting comfortable and staying within myself and just let it happen. So
I've watched some tape, man, and it looks smooth. The swing looks smooth. I like the bat waggle. I like the movements at short. What is, and this is the big question, what's the walk-up music this year for Tim Anderson?
Have
you picked yet?
I haven't picked. You've got time.
But I have some
artists that I'm choosing between. They kind of release some new music, so I have a lot of options.
All right, let's talk this out. Who are we thinking about here?
I have Lucci.
Sure.
I have Future.
Okay.
I have a little bit of Kevin Gates to pick from, so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What are you on now? I mean, like, what's the top list when you're out there? Do you warm-ups with headphones and stuff in? I've seen guys, out there, they take ground balls with headphones.
I'm always listening to music, like,
right.
Even just I listen to a lot of music. Well, right now it's on my at the top of my list is Lucci, Wish Me Well Too.
Okay.
So his album just came out probably a couple of days ago. So, it's amazing. So, he's at the top of my list right now.
Have you plugged in the new Kanye? I have it rolling right now in the other studio. Don't tell Kanye. It's probably illegal what I'm doing, but have you listened to it yet?
I haven't listened to it.
Okay.
So.
All right. I'll bring it down. You know what? I'll tell you what. I'm going to be down next weekend. I'll make sure you've got it. We'll figure out the new Kanye together. Maybe we can figure out a walk-up song for you.
Okay. Sounds good.
Excellent. Excellent. Tim, best of luck in the next couple of weeks here. Have a great spring training, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Thank you.
Absolutely. Tim Anderson, White Sox shortstop, joining us here on White Sox Weekly. We'll be back with more. Keep it right here. WLS AM 890.
Passion, pride, tradition. The White Sox play here. WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. Just got done talking with White Sox shortstop and top prospect Tim Anderson. I guess it depends on exactly which service and which people you like to look at prospect ratings for. It's either him or Carson Fulmer at the top. Most people have Tim up there. But he's right there for you, and hopefully, you know, you talk to him, and we had a nice little conversation there. He wrote, and we mentioned it a couple of times, or if you tuned in like midway through the interview and you missed it, Tim wrote a pretty cool piece for a pretty cool blog. I follow them, futuresox.com. They're a great source, and you know, for just reading around, seeing what they're talking about. The White Sox blogosphere is actually a pretty darn good one, and the guys over at Future Sox do a good job of it. Anderson was writing a lot about his, I don't know, I mean, he qualifies him as setbacks, you know, the two broken legs in high school. He didn't play much baseball coming into his first 2 years at East Central Community College, and really kind of bloomed in his sophomore season there. And we talked with Buddy Bell, White Sox assistant GM and president of player development. We talked a lot about how the White Sox have a bunch of guys in that system who played other sports, who came up playing, you know, whether it's basketball or football. There's a speed skater in the White Sox organization. There's a lot of different athletic background for a lot of players in the White Sox system, and for a lot of position players in the system as well. And I find it interesting because, you know, we over and over again think about, you know, these days, you know, kids playing travel ball and having to commit to baseball or really any sport at such a young age and having to specialize. And, you know, my God, how do you find time to do anything else if you make your travel baseball team? Because they demand, what, like 8 months out of the year, something like that? I mean, it's insane. I mean, you hit almost 11 years old, 12 years old, and you're doing one thing. You're only allowed to play baseball at some point, if you're playing at those upper levels of talent, you know, at the youth leagues. I find it pretty cool that guys have different backgrounds. And I remember a conversation that I had a couple of years ago with Don Cooper, White Sox pitching coach, talking about how, you know, every single time, he'd rather have, you know, the athlete out there on the mound, the guy who's got a little bit of background, whether it's, you know, football, basketball, or whatever, because it gives that guy such a better, and he used the word balance, but he didn't quite mean it, you know, as literal balance, you know, being able to stand on one foot and walk a line or anything like that. He meant, you know, just kind of a balance in experience and a balance in athletic background. And that can only help a guy when he's out there on the field. Now, it does affect a player's development rate, I think, to a certain degree. I mean, there's no secret that while, you know, Tim is a top prospect in this White Sox system, and indeed one of the top 50, you know, given, you know, whose rankings you're reading, one of the top 50 in all of baseball, there's no doubt that people are looking around and going, okay, well, can he play shortstop? Does he stick there athletically? Does the bat play, given his knowledge of the strike zone, are his swings and misses tolerable given the power that he's going to bring or may not bring? A lot of the standard questions that you have with prospects that haven't been, you know, in baseball their entire athletic career. Now, even if, you know, it's weird too, even if Tim had, you know, specialized in baseball, then, you know, the injuries still, I know they happen on the basketball field, but if he has injuries, you know, that still sets him back some. You know, Tim's a really interesting prospect and a good conversation with him. You can check out the whole column where he details his, you know, his 7-for-8 with 3 homers in his first 2 games, sophomore year at East Central, and his .495 batting average, which are all pretty impressive stats, over at FutureSox.com. I encourage you to go read the column. It's a good one. We were talking with CSN's Dan Hayes to start the show and got to talking quite a bit about where this team is going in the next 3 or 4 weeks and whether or not there's something left for Rick Hahn to go out and accomplish. And I just mean that as far as moves to make, not necessarily from a life standpoint or anything like that. Rick made some comments, and I want to bring some of these back for you. It's a little clip of him talking with the press in case you missed it yesterday. It was really great weather, so if you were outside, playing golf would have been a terrible idea yesterday, probably because the ground was wet and the wind was nasty. But if you were out, getting something done, maybe you missed the latest on your White Sox, so that's what we're here for this afternoon. If you would, Justin, our producer, this is Rick Hahn talking specifically about what the improvements, how he views the improvements that this team has made on offense, given the struggles they had last year, and exactly what may be to come in the next few weeks. Take a listen.
Based on the group we have in there now, we certainly feel we're improved offensively over where we were based upon the additions of Frazier and Laurie and Alex and Diner behind the plate. On top of that, we do expect some internal improvement. We expect guys like LaRoche and Avi to be, over the course of a full season, the player that they've shown flashes of being. Obviously, Eaton and Melky got off to slow starts before they sort of returned to form, and we're optimistic that we'll get a full 6 or 7 months out of those guys at their accustomed levels, which will internally provide us with a nice boost to the offense as well.
Rick also talked a little bit about the potential of additions. We all know, and the conversation has been, wall to wall since Sox Fest, or at least even a week before Sox Fest. Whether Dexter Fowler fits, whether Ian Desmond is worth the shot, if Austin Jackson is a kind of low risk bench guy who turns into a factor in right field or something like that. I mean, because of the way this offseason has shaped up, from a macro standpoint, from an every team standpoint and every player standpoint, there are still guys out there that could make an impact on a couple of different rosters. But what Hahn's talking about here is, I find the White Sox offense pretty interesting because the impact guys you know and you can point to, you know and expect Todd Frazier to have a season similar to what he had last year. Hopefully it's a little bit more consistent. His first half and second half have been pretty well documented. You're looking at Jose Abreu to do, what he's done last season. And my God, some of the projections for Jose Abreu's 2016 are just through the roof. What you're going to get from him. You expect Adam Eaton to have a full season the way he finished last season. You expect the same out of Melky Cabrera for his, second half of last season to be all of 2016, to be more consistent with 2016. And what Hahn is talking about here, some of the internal improvement, you're looking for guys like Avi Garcia. You're looking for guys like Tyler Saladino and Adam LaRoche to be, major league average players to a certain degree, and then at that point they're producing so much more offensively because of the struggles they had last year. I mean, listen, this offense struggled to score runs, and this coming season the hope is that general bounce backs from those 3-4 guys really nets you a lot more, a lot more offense, a lot more runs, a lot more havoc on base paths, a lot more runners on and a couple more walks, and backing up this pitching staff, which is going to be good every season. We've seen that over the last handful with Chris Sale and Jose Quintana, Carlos Rodon. I don't know if you saw this too. Anyway, you get the point with where Rick Hahn wants this offense to shape up this in 2016. I did want to bring, there's a quote from Carlos Rodon. Somebody asked him, what he learned last season. What did you take with you? It was one of those, we behind mics or, when we're writing, all that kind of stuff, we tend to think that we're asking these great philosophical, deep questions that we're going to get these long think piece answers on. And we get ourselves into broadcast hell sometimes. It's what we do. You drill yourself in. I have been there many times. Someone asked Carlos what he learned last year, and Carlos flat out just goes, strikes, man. Just throw strikes. And then he clams up and looks around for the next question. You know, he didn't get, I thought it was fantastic. Just throw strikes. That's all I learned in 2015, throw strikes. And you hope Carlos does throw a few more of those, and I wouldn't mind seeing the swing and miss on some balls out of the zone, maybe like that slider that comes around. Chris Sale, we talked about some too, and he talked with reporters out there in Arizona yesterday, and I found this cut fairly interesting. We talked in and around this with Dan Hayes when we opened up the show. Just kind of, I don't know, I guess I'd characterize this most as Chris looking back at where he's been the last handful of years and what he wants badly for this team to accomplish in 2016. I find it interesting when, you know, when a guy's asked about his own, I don't know, personal goals for a season, he defers really quickly to, I don't care, I want this. Here's what he wanted.
You don't start off every year to say, I want to have a good year and go home early. The point is to get to the playoffs. And, you know, no matter how we get there, who gets us there, or you know, the position we're in when we get there, that's the whole point. It doesn't matter how you get there, limp in, finish strong, you know, the whole way through, you know, whatever. You know, it's just about getting there. And then once you're there, I've heard anything can happen. So, you know, that's the plan for us this year is getting there.
Anything can happen. There's no doubt about that. Chris also had another pretty great quote earlier in his press conference. Okay, so he says, you win a lot of ball games and good things happen. People start showing up in terms of the fans. Nobody's ever in a bad mood when you're winning. This is Chris Sale. He goes on to say, you come up and slap me in the face when we win 10 in a row, and I'm going to laugh at it. Now, obviously, there's going to, but his teammates are not going to let him forget that. And God willing, White Sox win 10 in a row. I think there's going to be a feature about how many players, how many teammates are ended up slapping Chris Sale in the face. Hopefully all in good name. I mean, when you win 10 in a row, you can do whatever the heck you want. That's kind of what Chris Sale's talking about. Take a quick break here. We got a couple of notes to get to and a passing of a former member of the White Sox family that saddened us a little bit. I want to take a look back at Tony Phillips' career quickly if we can. And we will we'll hand it over as well. Quick break here on White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
White Sox baseball. Experience it here. WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. The White Sox and really all of baseball, sad to hear about the passing of Tony Phillips. He died Wednesday of a heart attack. He was only 56. The news was confirmed on Friday. The Oakland A's kind of confirmed that. You'll remember Tony. I mean, a lot of people have, and in reading some of the things his former teammates have said about him, an absolute bulldog of a player, a super utility guy, if there ever was one. He played from 82 to 89 with the Oakland A's. He recorded the last out of the 1989 World Series. Spent a couple of years in Detroit, 90 all the way to 94, a year with the Angels, and then the White Sox from 96 until about midway through 97. He was about 30 games into 1997. He was moved to Anaheim. A guy who's got a career on base of .374 could really, and you ask anybody, he could play any position you wanted it to move. Played center field, played left field, played third base, played a little bit of second base, a handful at shortstop, a couple at first base as well. I mean, you could do anything you wanted on the diamond. Ozzie Guillen actually tweeted it too. Much respect to him. Always had to play hard against Tony Phillips, and our condolences here on White Sox Weekly to his family. Tony Phillips had the highest career WAR in the All-Star era by any player who never made the All-Star team. Baseball Reference tweeted that out just a little bit ago. That's going to do it for us. Much thanks for tuning in and texting and calling. Most of all, thanks for listening. Baseball is beginning, and March 3rd is our first game here on WLS. The White Sox get the Dodgers. Keep it here because you'll hear it all. I'll be down in spring training next weekend. We'll bring you everything we can from Glendale. Keep it right here. Everything White Sox, all on White Sox Weekly. News is next. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Dan Hayes of Comcast Sportsnet, and thanks to Tim Anderson.